You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, Mr. Horowitz. In this case, this is a case under the Nebraska Wage Payment and Collection Act. There was a summary judgment that was held. They were competing summary judgments, one by the plaintiffs, one by the defendant. And in that case, Judge Jacobson sustained the defendant's summary judgment, giving them summary judgment, dismissing our case. We're here today to obviously appeal that decision. The standard of review in this case is, in reviewing a summary judgment, an appellate court views the evidence in the light most favorable to the party against whom the judgment was granted, giving that party the benefit of all reasonable inferences deducible from the evidence. Well, that's us. So I'm glad I got to talk first. Why are we here? In this case, in 2013, in order to be employed by Longwell's restaurant down in the rail yard, the appellants were required to sign an employment agreement that provided PTO. To me, it was a unilateral contract, in other words, an adhesion contract. There was no way that my clients had any ability to change anything in the contract, to add anything to the contract. They were just required to sign it in order to get employment. So they agreed to sign it in order to get employment. They both signed the contract and went on their way. Mr. Drought was the general manager of Longwell's, and Mr. Fessler was the head chef. And based upon that, 2 years later, Mr. Drought was dismissed, and Mr. Fessler resigned. But based on the contract had a PTO provision that indicated that for every 40-plus hours worked, they would receive 4 hours of PTO.
Worked or billed?
Well, it says billed, but again, the contract was not created by my clients. The contract was created by the employer. So, and the defendants have always argued mutual mistake. Well, there can't be a mutual mistake in an employment agreement. It is a unilateral or an adhesion contract. We had nothing to do with that contract. So, but again, they were required to sign it in order to gain employment. So they did.
That contract had a lot of inapplicable provisions to this situation. What effect does that have on your claim?
You know, I believe that it doesn't have any effect, because I will tell you that the appellee is going to state that the only reason the contract was given to my clients was because there was a non-compete provision in that contract. So he was only relying upon that provision of the contract and stating the rest was just a bunch of hooey, you don't get any PTO. So, and I'll tell you where that contract came from. This specific owner, Mr. Marsh, also owned a consulting business in Omaha. And accordingly, he just grabbed his consulting business contract, brought it over to Lincoln, Nebraska, where he owns a restaurant called Longwell's, and had them sign that so they would have employment there. And again, it was required. There was no ifs, ands, or buts that they were not going to get employment unless they signed that contract. So after 2 years, when Mr. Drought was dismissed and Mr. Fessler was separated from employment, they both, even though they're not required to, requested to receive their earned, but unused PTO from Mr. Marsh, and basically he told them to pound sand. Secondly, the judge in this case, Judge Jacobson, in his order indicates that they were paid PTO when they took two different vacations, and they were paid for it by Longwell's. So in my opinion, then, they were entitled to get, under the Wage Payment and Collection Act, they were already paid it at some point. They should have received it upon their separation from employment.
We just write out of the contract these provisions that you don't like?
I'm sorry?
We just write out of the contract the provisions that you would find inconvenient?
Well, my clients didn't have any ability to do that. But, and neither did, I mean, he, Mr. Longwell, I mean, Mr. Marsh is the one who provided the contract. My clients had no ability to negotiate with them. It was just, here it is, sign it, you're hired.
But isn't that the contract upon which you are relying in this case?
On the PTO provisions, yes, and as well as the non-compete.
You're just picking out the parts of it that you want to rely on and disregarding the parts that you don't want to rely on?
I don't know that the word want is appropriate. I think it's...
Well, choose whatever word you want.
The parts that apply to them. The parts of it that apply to them. There was a non-compete. That applies to them. Mr.
You've got a written contract. They signed it, right?
Correct.
And it's not stricken out.
Right.
It doesn't say somewhere, paragraphs so-and-so don't apply.
Correct.
So what's the argument, the legal argument, that we disregard part of the written contract?
The legal argument is that because it's a unilateral contract and the claim is that there's a mutual mistake on the contract concerning the PTO provisions, that they had no ability to scratch out what they want or to circle what they wanted in that contract.
Why
it was just given to them and they had to sign it.
Why is this a unilateral contract? And we said that before.
It's an employment contract.
Okay.
An employment contract is you're going to do services for me and I'm going to pay you. And then here's all the, and then you may have a contract that says here's your PTO, here's your...
Have we said that then in the past?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
An employment contract is basically the, I guess, you give the employment contract to the proposed employee, they sign it, and they're your employer. Their I guess, agreement is to provide services for you.
And that's the extent of it?
Yes.
And you have what authority or proposition to support that?
Oh, I have a case. Sorry.
So are all employment contracts adhesion contracts?
I would say they are, Your Honor, because if the employee doesn't have any ability to add things, take things out,
what do we do with that then? If all employment contracts are adhesion or unilateral, you characterize them, what follows from that? What's the legal consequence?
Well, the legal consequences are if you provide in your unilateral contract PTO for your employee and you don't get it after you're separated from, you're in violation of the wage payment and collection act.
But it says PTO for hours billed and they didn't have any hours billed.
That is true, Your Honor, but you could take hours billed as, I mean,
so is the argument
as hours worked.
So it's an ambiguity?
I think it is an ambiguity, but you could take hours billed as hours worked. You could take vacation versus PTO. I mean, it's all over the place. So, and the contract is not a good contract. I don't disagree with that. But it was in the contract that they were required to sign. They earned PTO throughout the 2 years that they were each there, and so they were entitled to it under the Wage Payment Collection Act.
Does it matter in this case that we're looking at a contract and not, say, as we have in other cases, a manual? Manual that rules of employment.
I mean, I think it does talk about, like, if something's in an employee manual, like, for example, PTO, there's case law on that as well.
On manuals, does that matter? Is there a distinction? Does it matter?
I don't think so. Because they didn't really have, as far as I know, they didn't have an employee manual.
This is a smaller outfit that might not have a manual of industrial size.
No, I'm not sure if they ever did. If they did, I never saw one.
Okay.
So I'm gonna reserve my 35 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Korwitz, good morning to you.
Morning, Your Honor. Your Honors, Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Brian Kerwitz. I represent the appellees, the Bar at the Yard LLC, and Eric Marsh. I want to start with a little background on the pleadings in this case. The appellants allege in paragraph 5 of their complaint that they are required to sign an employment agreement as a condition of obtaining employment. I bring this up right away because of this argument that somehow this is a unilateral contract. An employment contract is just like any other contract. The times that it becomes unilateral is where you have a condition of continued employment. They weren't already employed, and there's no allegation that they were. This is where you come in with handbooks. If you're already an employee, your employer says, hey, here's this handbook, sign the handbook, and you know this is a condition of your continued employment. Those are the cases where it's a unilateral contract, no other times. Then going forward, appellants further allege that the employment agreement governs the paid time off. The appellants never allege in their pleadings that the agreement should be reformed or that it was ambiguous in any way. In response to the complaint, the appellees allege that the agreement was the product of mutual mistake, but that the court found that it should not be reformed or rescinded, that the agreement by its terms barred any claims to PTO.
If the complaint wasn't seeking reformation, why does the order address reformation?
The plaintiffs never sought reformation. In my answer, I pled as an affirmative defense, reformation. And part of this was because there were actually two other lawsuits. My clients filed declaratory judgment actions first prior to the plaintiffs, in this case, filing their action. My declaratory judgment action was to reform or rescind the agreement based upon mutual mistake. So there's some overlap between those cases. Those cases got put to the side, and we litigated in this case where both plaintiffs were joined in one case. I had two lawsuits, one on each employee. To the extent it discusses reformation, it's because I raised it. And I think that's clear when you look at the transcript from the hearing on the summary judgment proceeding. My clients are the only parties that raised reformation. And to the extent reformation should be had, we're going to look at the actually agreement, what was agreed to by the parties. It is clear that there was never an agreement on PTO. It was never discussed prior to employment. It was never discussed as a condition of employment. The only time it came up was when these individuals, a year into their employment, went and looked at their file, pulled out this document.
Didn't it come up in the document? Wasn't it there from the beginning?
In the beginning,
they may not have realized it was in there, and they may not have asked for it, but it's in there from the beginning.
Absolutely. It's in there from the beginning. Nobody knew it was in there is my point. Sloppy contracting, absolutely. They realized it was in there, they being the employees, realized it was in there a year into their employment because they went looking at another employee's files, and you see that in the deposition transcripts. And that's when they raised for the first time, hey, Mr. Marsh, we think we should get PTO. And Mr. Marsh, according to Fessler's testimony, said, quote, I thought this, Mr. Marsh, according to Fessler, said that this was bogus and you're going to be crazy if you think I'm going to pay this. Mr. Marsh didn't realize it was in there either, which is why I pled the mutual mistake.
Had he already paid it?
What's that?
Had he already paid it by that point?
No, he had never paid PTO.
Didn't they have vacation time? Get paid during that time?
Yeah, let me address this. The appellants in this case have tried, in my opinion, to mislead the court on this basis of PTO being paid out during the course of their employment. That makes no sense logically. If they went to Mr. Marsh and said, Mr. Marsh, we want PTO, and he says, no, I'm not giving you PTO, then they stay employed for another year. Obviously, he didn't pay them PTO. Now they argue, hey, we took vacations, and we got paid while we're on vacation. Well, remember, they were salaried employees, and here's what the discussion was during their depositions. I asked them about whether or not prior to employment that they had discussions about vacation. According to Drought, quote, my question, did you have any specific discussions on how much vacation you'd be given, if any, while working at Longwell's? His answer, nothing was solidified. Fessler, question, and was there any finality to the discussion related to vacation? Answer, no. I followed that up in his deposition with Mr. Drought, and I'm going to just read a couple sentences from that deposition. Question, what was your understanding of what vacation you could take off? Drought's answer, my personal opinion is just reasonable days that weren't going to affect the business. And if I discussed it with Eric and he had an issue with it, then I would have revisited my days. Question. And that's kind of what I thought. It's one of those deals where if you work hard and you need some time off, you take time off, right? Answer, right. Question. There was no contemplation at the time that you were taking time off that was for the purpose of using PTO, right? Answer, correct. These gentlemen were salaried employees. They took off when they wanted to after talking to their boss. There was no agreement that they had a set number of vacation days that they were entitled to be paid for upon separation. Going back to the bigger point of what is this agreement, what it says, there's no doubt that the agreement was not contemplated to apply to these individuals. The concept of billable hours, and we got a lot of attorneys in this room. We all know what billable hours means, and when you look at the depositions of these folks, they knew what billable hours meant, and they knew it didn't apply to them. This was not an adhesion contract. There's no requirement that I have to hire you or that you have to come work for me. This was a contract entered into at the start of employment as a condition, according to appellants, of obtaining employment. Accordingly, if they had a problem with the language in this agreement, like you said, one of the judges had posed this question to opposing counsel, why didn't they circle it? Why didn't they make changes? They could have. Once again, nobody did. So we're stuck here with a contract that does not apply to these individuals. They did not have billable hours because they did not have clients. The agreement actually requires, as part of a billable hour, for the employees to go get a timesheet signed by that client. And then you present that timesheet to the employer as proof of your billable hours. As noted by the district court, there were no timesheets submitted to show that they had billable hours. Accordingly, the district court found, hey, you know what, according to the agreement, PTO is based upon billable hours. You didn't have any. I'm granting summary judgment. And then the other thing I'd like to point out, and the district court does not touch on that.
Wasn't the pay also based upon billable hours?
Sorry, Your Honor.
According to the contract, wasn't their pay also based upon billable hours?
Yes.
And they got paid without submitting billable hours.
They were salaried employees. This particular contract was an hourly contract. This particular contract said, hey, you get no benefits. Well, they had cell phones that were paid for, they had parking that was paid for, and they had health insurance. There was nothing in this agreement that was ever intended to apply to these employees beyond, in my client's mind, the non-compete. If you look at what happened here, he had another employee who he asked to get them a contract. She worked in human resources, and he was under the understanding she would provide an agreement that was suitable.
So do you agree or disagree with the rationale of the district court's actual decision?
I agree, Your Honor, to the extent that the contract was not reformed or rescinded, that by its terms, it bars PTO. They never earned PTO under the agreement. Now, I would contend that it is a mutual mistake. As I think about this, this would be like...
But you didn't cross appeal.
I did not cross appeal, no.
So that's not really in front of us.
Yeah, and once again, appellants did not ask for reformation here. That's not on their appeal. They never pled it, never asked for it. They never even asserted ambiguity. Now, they're raising these issues for the first time on appeal, which I address in my brief. Any other questions? I don't have a lot else to add. I'll just wrap it up and state that under the terms of this agreement, they did not earn PTO. They can't pick and choose what provisions of the agreement that they want to utilize. Accordingly, I'd request this court affirm the order of the district court and further find that there's no reasonable dispute as to the fact that the appellants were not entitled to PTO.
Before you sit down, were you seeking to enforce in the other actions any aspect of this contract?
No, Your Honor.
The other actions were only to reform or to rescind?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 35 seconds.
35 seconds, Ms. Tompkin.
Real fast, I'd like to quickly just tell you that the case that discusses the unilateral contract versus in an employment situation is actually an Eighth Circuit case, but I do believe it's completely illustrative of this matter. It's called Boswell versus Panera Bread Company, 879 Fed 3rd, 296. It's a 2018 case out of the Eighth Circuit. Secondly, Mr. Marsh did try to enforce a term of that contract concerning the non-compete. So we tried to do the PTO. They're working on the non-compete. So he did include that within that contract and utilized that.
Did he try to judicially enforce it?
Yes, he did.
When?
As a matter of fact, we were in settlement discussions over this prior to filing lawsuit.
Where
concerning the PTO.
Where in the record do we have?
I don't have it. We don't have that record.
Do we have anything in the record showing an attempt to judicially enforce the non-competition portions of the agreement?
I need to. I'm not sure, Your Honor. Sorry. But my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day then is DH1 LLC versus City of Falls City. I am recused from this matter. Justice Miller Lerman will preside. So give me a second to get out of the courtroom.
Okay.